following is a remastered version of A Worthy Opponent, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And welcome to turn four of A Worthy Opponent, a podcast about the new Blizzard game Hearthstone that is still currently in beta, soon to be in open beta, but not quite yet. You are listening to me. I am Black Lace.
And I am Autumn's Bane. Welcome to our inn.
Yes, he's our voice activist.
Voice activist.
And tonight we're going to talk about...
I protest. I'm picketing for voice rights.
No. We're going to talk about a couple things tonight. We're going to be talking about special abilities of cards. We haven't really touched... We've briefly mentioned enchanting. We're going to talk more about enchanting. I'll give you a little bit on apps I've researched and some of what we have done in-game.
Well, what have you done in-game?
Oh, well, I finally made it to my one-star gold. I don't know exactly when the ranks change. That's one thing I'm hoping Blizzard's going to let us know, but I made it to my 147th win.
Yay.
I've only played one arena. I really have to get on board with that, but my downfall is as soon as I collect 100 gold, I want to spend it and open new packs. I don't want to wait for another 50 gold and then go into arena, even though I'll get a pack doing that. I just can't wait. I gotta unwrap my pack.
Need immediate gratification.
I do. I like seeing it dance and sparkle across the screen and then fling cards all over and hover over and see if they're different colors and
let
cheer.
Loose the fairies.
And let loose the fairies. Oh, and tonight we heard something really horrible about the Tooth Fairy. It has nothing to do with the game.
No.
Yeah.
Fun, like the Tooth Fairy, but without collecting human bones.
Yes, I've been traumatized that the Tooth Fairy will never be the same to me again because I never thought of her as a bone collector.
Yes, she is.
But that has nothing to do with Hearthstone. And yeah, back to what we were talking about. So I am at 1-star gold, and you're at, what, 2-star gold?
No, I'm at 1-star gold. I've been there for a long time. I've got 186 wins, and I think I picked up my 1-star gold at about 104 wins. So it's like 82 wins ago.
Yeah. But we need a book. We need Hearthstone for Dummies, because they don't tell us when we shift.
They're not going to. And nobody can. And the reason you can't really tell or can't gauge it, because it's not your wins and losses exactly, it goes by your wins and losses against other people of higher or lower rank. So you won't rise up the ranks quickly if you keep playing inferior players. You will if you keep beating superior players, or at least people equal to you. But when you lose, that brings your ratio down. If you're losing to new people,
I don't think you can go backwards.
No, they won't let you go backwards. But they're revamping the entire ranking system. So before the game is released, we'll see a completely different ranking system. They mentioned it at BlizzCon.
That's good, too. I do want to hear more about that, but my thought is because of people who haven't been in closed beta or people who are going to be in the open beta or when it's finally released, we'll have people like us who've been playing for a while. We're already going to be in the golds and wherever, whereas these brand new players are just going to be starting out and haven't tuned their decks.
Yeah, but they'll be playing against hundreds of thousands of other people who are in the same boat.
Correct.
If they're really good, they'll rise up the ranks very quickly.
So tell me more.
So I'm 186 wins and a 1-star gold in the play mode. I managed to get 13 total wins in arena, and I haven't gotten my silver medal. I'm still at copper. But you want your immediate gratification. I apparently am a masochist and choose the slow route to card gaining through being tortured and humiliated.
So no, you were starting to say something about BlizzCon. I don't remember that. And for our listeners, do you remember what they were saying the new tier would be is to quote-unquote leveling in Hearthstone? I'm not talking about the characters leveling. I'm talking about the players.
Well, there's going to be a different way of judging. And I remember icons. You're going to be able to advance yourself in level. And when you're at the very bottom tier, you'll be the angry chicken. And then, like, the next one is a leper gnome.
Right.
And so on and so on. And the higher tiers, like, if you get the very top tier, you don't get an in-game character. You get that dwarf who's the innkeeper. Some people were actually complaining about that recently, that they wanted something epic like, you know, Ragnaros or Illidan or something, as opposed to just some drunken dwarf.
Hey, nothing wrong with drunken dwarves. All right, so let's move on to talk about enchanting. We had briefly touched upon it in the past. We have a couple of new apps we want to talk about that give you little hints on it, but the actual enchanting in the game is done by when you have multiples of cards that you can break into dust, and then when you have cards that you want, you can use that dust to create them. That's the long and short of it, but tell me more about the long of it.
Okay, well, I'm looking at my main screen right now, and if I go to the bottom center, it says My Collection. I click on that, and it opens up my card inventory. Now I see my decks on my right, and I see my cards to the left. But toward the middle, slightly right of middle, to the right of all the tabs that show my different hero cards and my neutral cards, there's something called Crafting Mode. Now I click on Crafting Mode, and if you ever wanted to see what all of the cards look like, going into Crafting Mode is the way. Because if you're just looking at your regular card inventory, you cannot see cards you don't have. In the Crafting Mode, however, you can. For example, I have a spell that's grayed out to me. It's called Nourish, which is a spell that enables me to choose one, gain 2 mana crystals, or draw 3 cards. So clearly that has to be a druid card. And they have cute little flavor text, like the flavor text of the one I'm looking at now, the Nourish, says, "Druids take nourishment from many things, the power of nature, the songbird's chirp, a chocolate cake." And then beneath that, it says that it's expert, meaning it's not from the basic set. Below that, it says that it's rare, or the blue gem shows right there. And then it shows the artist, Therese Nielsen. So you can get more information about each card by going into Crafting Mode than you can from looking at your regular inventory.
Yep, and just to expand on that, when you're looking at the book itself, it's really nice. The top of the book has all the different tabs, so you can look at the specific cards you're going to want to be crafting in your favorite deck. So if you're a mage, you can be looking at, let's see, you can be looking at Icelance, which for me is gray, or Mana Worm, Sorcerer's Apprentice, Cone of Cold. So I can see everything that I have available to me or could have available to me as a mage, and it won't show me any other class. And then there's the very last tab, which shows you all of the neutral cards that have the rest of your filling out your decks.
Yeah, and at the bottom of the screen, whereas the top has the tabs you were describing, the bottom shows mana crystals, so you could click on a mana crystal and isolate cards by their mana cost. And then, if you want a very specific card or a type of card, there's a search box. So I could search the name of a card or the name of something in the card, or I could type in pirate and all the pirates will show up. So it's
the nice thing is
interface.
That if, yeah, when you're this is good for deck building, because if I've gotten to the point where I have all my, you want small creatures to come out fast and furious. Some people do, some people don't, depends on your deck. But once I've gotten all my small creatures out and I want to get a couple of big whammies out there, I can click on the crystal 6 and it will only show me the cards that are a 6 casting cost to bring out. This is in the regular mode as well, but again, I like looking at it in crafting mode because then I can see what I can get and what I don't have yet.
Now, if you look over to the right panel, it says card crafting, and it gives you pretty basic instructions. Select a card to start crafting. Spend arcane dust to create cards and acquire dust by disenchanting cards. Costs vary with card rarity. And then there are filters where you can show only golden cards or include soulbound cards. I have no idea what a soulbound card is. In any event, the costs are, they vary widely. Now, throughout the game, you can get golden cards. These are basically the same as the cards that are used in any other deck. However,
but prettier.
They're pretty. So they'll sparkle, they have a gold border, they have animation.
They have animation. Yeah, those are nice. I actually played somebody this week. I don't know if every card he played was golden, but oh my gosh, this must have been a money deck because he had good cards, but everything was gold, and the animations are just gorgeous. They put a lot into this game.
They do. And so a lot of players, they don't care about pretty and shiny. They just want more loot. So when you disenchant the cards, if they're golden, you get much more dust. So I've been making a habit of keeping the golden minions, because they're out on the board for people to see, and disenchanting the spells that get used and then go away, because it's not going to stick around to look at, and you get much more dust. So to break down the dust, and what you can do is each card has a cost to disenchant what you will get, and then a cost to enchant it. So you cannot disenchant the basic cards that you unlock by leveling up your heroes to level 10. Those are permanently in your collection, and they cannot be disenchanted. But the common cards, they will disenchant to 5. So disenchanting them is kind of anticlimactic. You only get 5. If you want to create a common card, however, it's fairly cheap. It's only 40 dust to create one. If it's gold, however, it disenchants to 50. And if you want to make a gold common card, it costs 400. Quite a bit.
Right.
We move up to the rares. I'm sorry, Black Lace, you were saying?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up one other point as before we go up to the rares. If you have, again, all you can have are 2 cards per deck, 2 of a certain card per deck. So if I have 2 Priestesses of Alun, that's all I can put in my deck. If I have 2 regular Priestesses of Alun, I can still have 2 gold Priestesses of Alun. So technically, I have 4 of the same card. Can only put 2 in my deck. So there's where you're going to have your choice. You can disenchant the ones that are gold. You can disenchant the ones that are not gold. Because you can only play 2. And you can put them in all 8 of your decks or whatever.
Right. So every time you get a pack of cards and you open them up, and hopefully you get all cards that you don't have, but the more card packs you buy, the less likely that's going to happen. So chances are you'll have 1 or 2 cards that are now duplicate, or even triplicate or quadruplicate. So you can go to the crafting mode, and there'll be a little box to the lower right-hand side that'll be an auto disenchant, and it'll tell you have this many cards above 2 of rare and this many cards above 2 of uncommon, or you could click that one button and then all the extras will just disenchant on their own. And that's what I tend to do immediately after buying packs. Then I don't have to search through my entire collection, say, how many do I have of this? How many do I have of that? It's pretty handy.
Right, and again, those I think will just disenchant the regulars. I don't believe that would disenchant golds over regulars.
Yeah, well, it will only enchant what you have more than 2. So
correct.
If you had 3 golden cards, I'm guessing it would disenchant that 3rd golden card.
So now I have a pirate deck that I want to build, and my pirate leader is, I think, Green... What's his name? Green something or other. It's Captain Greenskin. He is... I can get gold or I can get regular. He would be the top card I need to make my pirate deck. What would I need to be able to actually create him? Because he's a legendary.
Well, he's a legendary. Now, if you wanted to make a gold legendary, you'd actually need 3,200 dust. But if you wanted
to make... So if I disenchant a common, I get 40 dust?
You disenchant a common, you get 5 dust.
Okay, so we're talking a lot saving here to get the card I want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It costs 1,600 gold to... I'm sorry. You would get 1,600 gold to disenchant a golden legendary. Which is, by the way, enough to make a normal legendary. So, if you had a gold of one legendary and you wanted a different one, then you could trade that way. It's 400 dust to disenchant a regular legendary and 1,600 to make a regular legendary. 1,600 gold to disenchant a legendary and 3,200 to make one.
Dust, not gold.
Dust. That's right, okay. Dust. So the rares, they disenchant for 20. That's not a lot either. And you can make a rare for 100. I actually did that the other day. I wanted to copy somebody's deck. I said, gee, I need that card. Oh, it's a rare. It's only 100. I'll make it. And then and I'll just make one. So if you don't have any and you make the one, you've got one. If you have one already, you make another, you've got the two. And then there's no reason to make a third. If you make those rares gold, then it's 100 to disenchant the rare gold and 800 to make the rare gold. And finally, the one category we didn't talk about are epics. I take an epic, I disenchant it, I get 100 dust. If I want to make an epic, it costs 400 dust. But if I have a gold epic, I can disenchant it for 400 or make another one for 1600. So if you really want pretty cards and rare cards, you're going to have to spend a lot of dust.
Right. And now in the lower right-hand corner is the little blue vial of dust, and it says disenchant extra cards. If you click on that, it actually tells you how many cards you have that you can disenchant, and it lets you know that you can't have more than 2 copies of the card, and that if you hit the disenchant, it's not going to disenchant your very last card of that type. It's set to only disenchant the extras.
Now, right now, I'm
good,
grayed out for that.
Because I make a lot of dumb mistakes.
I'm grayed out for that. You're not, which means you have some cards that you could disenchant.
I can make 5 dust.
So that means that you have a duplicate common, or more than 2 commons, I should say.
And that's something else I've noticed about this game. Here we go. Tangent. Looking towards expansions, right now we have commons, rares, epics, and legendaries. We do not have green uncommons. I'm wondering if maybe they're saving the green uncommons for some other kind of expansion, or maybe they've just ditched the idea of uncommons altogether.
I think they had too many different classes of cards, and they wanted to settle with the 5. That's my opinion.
Could be. So anyway, you also do have filters. You can show only golden cards. You can, and as you said, include soulbound cards. I'm going to do some research this week and find out so that I can let our listeners know, since we seem to be clueless on what a soulbound card is, because as we know, you can't trade cards. I cannot trade my Elven Archer to Autumn Spain for his whatever. It's just not allowed. So how can you have a soulbound card if all the cards theoretically are yours only anyway?
Well, that's a good question. So apparently a soulbound card is a card quality found on non-expert cards, and they cannot be crafted or disenchanted. This I got from Hearthstone Heroes of Warcraft wiki. There's an actual wiki, and I just looked it up while you were talking.
Yeah, and there's an app that's actually a Hearthstone wiki app, but it's kind of hard to use.
So these are the soulbound cards. All the basic cards, which come from leveling up your characters to 10. All reward cards, which we haven't seen any yet. And all promotion cards. And I'm guessing the promotion cards are probably the Elite Tauren Chieftain. And Megator.
That silly little goblin, yes.
That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, next thing we're going to talk about, we're going to move off of, unless you have anything else about enchanting that you want to let people know?
Yes, there's one other thing. When you play Arena, which I started to talk about my Arena experience before, Black Lace likes to just spend her 100 gold and get a card. The reason I've been going through the Arena process is because the more times you win an Arena, the more rewards you get. It costs more, but you get more rewards. So you get 5 little boxes that appear when your arena is open. Depending on how many you win, you get a little key, and the key opens a little coffer, and you'll unlock the coffer, and out pops your 5 little boxes. And twice this week, I got completely shut down with no wins. And I did win a few games. I'm up to 13 wins, but I completely got shut out with 2 decks which were very poorly made, and I was grossly outclassed. One guy had 2 legendary, no, not 2, 1 legendary, and just cleaned me up, and I had not even an option for legendary. So sometimes
that's unbalanced.
Yeah, I think it's unbalanced when somebody can get a legendary and another person doesn't even have it as a choice. But there's no sour grapes. They're all learning experiences. I'm learning how to lose gracefully. But when you win, let's get back to the little coffer. You get 5 little boxes. One of those boxes is guaranteed to be a new pack of cards. The other 4 boxes, depending on how many wins you had, will be varying quantities of gold or dust. So it was 5 dust for me each time. There were other games that I played where I'd get 10 dust. And gold, I think I've gotten anywhere from 5 to 15, depending on the game it was.
So you lost all 3 games, and even losing all 3 games, you still got dust, gold, and a pack.
Absolutely. You always get a pack. So that's why, to some people, spending that extra 50 gold is worth it, because you're not only going to get the pack, you're going to get gold, and you're going to get dust. And if you're lucky and skillful and you win several games, you can get more. And you can even get a bonus card. Remember, I got a golden card like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, this makes me rethink my impetuousness.
But it's brutal. It's brutal to play Arena and then face somebody
and
who outclasses you.
And time-consuming. Unlike playing normal play mode, the Arena is a lot more time-consuming.
Only at the beginning, when you're making your deck.
Okay. Now, did you find out that you can actually leave Arena in the middle?
You can.
And come back to it?
You can.
See, we had misled our listeners in the last couple of turns saying that you were not able to.
I corrected them last turn. I corrected ourselves last turn. There's a retire button in the lower left-hand corner. You don't want to click that unless you want to just give up. If you want to say, forget this, I don't want to play anymore, you hit retire. But you could leave the game, and you can come back later and finish your arena.
Now, how do you do that? Do you just shut down, or do you...
I just walk
away from your computer?
Yeah. Basically, you can do that, or just close the game. I basically just play back-to-back. I haven't tested the theory yet, but, I've heard of people leaving the game and coming back. So I believe that's true.
That's good, because I do know that we've had a couple of problems with when you get bumped out of the game entirely. Whether it's your internet or something on the Blizzard side, and suddenly your game crashes. We've had a lot of disgruntled Arena players, I thought, who couldn't get back in.
Yeah, that was happening in the past. And Blizzard has a fix for this. They say that in the future there'll be a way to get back into the game. But certainly it must be a timed issue. They can't let you just keep your opponent waiting indefinitely. For example, last night I was in the process of playing with a warrior. I was doing a quest for warrior dominance, and I was playing the best warrior game I had ever had. On the first turn, I had the coin. My first turn, I had the coin. I was able to put out a weapon that used 2 and attack my opponent. And then in the next turn, I had two mana again, because this time I did not have a coin, and I got an ability that added 4 damage. And on the third turn, I got a minion that cost 3. And on the fourth turn, I got a minion that cost 4. And I was just beating down my opponent. And then all of a sudden, everything goes kapow.
That wouldn't happen to be because somebody unplugged the internet, would it?
That could be that because somebody unplugged the internet in our house while cleaning their fish tank. We got it going again. I got back in 10-15 minutes later. I'm finally back in the game. Game is gone. Game is lost. And I had to take 3 more loses before I got my next win. But it happens. But again, I'm not sure how long Blizzard is going to let you disconnect before coming back. It certainly doesn't seem fair to the player who's waiting.
Right, but the thing is, when you come back, that game is over. But say you've won 2 games, and that game you logged out, you got bumped out, you lost that game. When you come back, do you still have those 2 wins and that 1 loss, or are you done?
Well, you're talking Arena. Last
right.
time I was playing just Constructed Play.
Oh, okay.
So I believe in Arena, if you get disconnected, there may be a way to recover and not take your loss. But understand the reason why they make you lose when you disconnect. Because everybody in gaming looks for the cheat. They look for the way to game the system. They look for the little exploits. And if you're losing and you know that you're not going to take the loss by disconnecting, people would be disconnecting left
this
and right.
This is true.
Just to avoid the loss.
This is true. And you don't want to have somebody sitting there twiddling their thumbs waiting for you to come back either. But if you were willing to take that loss or you accidentally took that loss, it's nice to know that you can come back into Arena, have that loss, but be able to at least finish your Arena bout.
We'll see where Blizzard goes with this, but
it's a costly test.
It is, but they're trying to make things good for everyone.
Yep. So, moving on to another topic, we were going to discuss the cards themselves in the game. The cards have 10 that I could tell actual attributes that are. Not just the typical, this is written on the card, you come out and, you know, you're doing your little pingy of 1 or 2 damage. There are actually 10 different effects that can happen the minute you drop a card into play. The first one I'm going to talk about is charge, and that is basically I drop my minion, and I'm able to, on my turn, not have my sleeping where I'm kind of passed out because I've just been called in and I'm exhausted. My minion is not tired the minute they enter. They can actually attack on the first round that they're called out, and that's called charge. Now, that's different than something that has, say, the Elven Archer, which I refer to a lot. The Elven Archer is a 1 mana cost to bring her out, and she is a 1/1 creature, and as soon as you can bring her out, you can send an arrow to hit your opponent or hit his minion. That's not the same thing as the card itself going forward and bashing its head into another card. That's an ability it's got on its own. Charge could be the specific card, just basically goes right into battle the minute you call it out.
Yeah, and that's become a very popular ability to use. They mentioned the forums and at BlizzCon, you know, people have this jargon that comes up in any game. They're starting to use this term aggro a lot. There are these aggro decks, and the aggro deck versus, let's say, a control deck like a priest might play is when you just hit your opponent in the face over and over as fast as possible, and charge cards are excellent for that. The warrior deck I've been playing is filled with cards that have charge. And, you know, if I allow my opponent to get ahead of me with more control-based cards or more creatures with taunt, then I'm kind of in trouble. But if the cards draw the way I want them to and they play the way I want them to, I could do a lot of damage quickly. And, of course, I'm mentioning a warrior. The warrior also has a weapon. So while my minions are attacking, I could also be smashing with weapons as well.
Right. Now, see, a card deck that's made by, say, Trump, the player named Trump, he doesn't believe in taunt. So if you have a charge deck and he's got a deck that doesn't have taunt, you're bashing the crap out of him. I would love to talk to him and find out if he's changed his mind since BlizzCon and if he's going to start using taunt, or whether or not he's still sticking by his guns and not using taunt.
Yeah, well, when Artosis, you know, was asked, you know, how his opponent could have done better, he did mention the taunt, and the interviewer asked him, you know, if he still felt the same way about taunt. He says, well, if people are going to continue playing lots of aggro decks, then I might have to reconsider that. So I think he was weakening and losing to hundreds of thousands of people as witnesses was probably a nudge in that direction.
Probably. Which brings us to our next ability.
Taunt, which you just mentioned. So taunt is the ability to force your player to attack it instead of the hero, or any other minion for that matter. It does not apply to certain hero abilities. So if you've got your taunt creature out there, and these are represented by a big shield surrounding the minion.
And I'm playing a hunter.
And you're playing a hunter, use your hero ability. The hero ability attacks only the other hero. So, bing, 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 I keep getting hit with arrows while the taunt creature is sitting there and not attracting your archery. Other hero abilities can bypass that, but you still cannot get past them with melee abilities from the hero class. So if I am a rogue, or I am a druid, and I pump up my power, and I try to attack the opposing hero, I still can't do it if there is a taunt creature on the board.
Now, and mind you, the taunt creature also has a damage ability. Just like any other creature, it just happens to use a shield. So if you actually attack a taunt creature with your hero directly, you're going to take damage.
And there are some very good taunt minions out there. The Shield Bearer, which is got a picture of a Draenei. It's a 0/4. It costs 1. I have had a lot of players hold me off for several turns with that 0/4 1 casting cost taunt creature.
Right, and the Warlock has one also. It's the Voidwalker, I believe, is a 1/4. So it 1/3. Actually does 1/3 and does a little bit of damage, and it's also got the taunt, and it's a one mana cost to bring it out.
Very, very useful cards, and with little exception, there's no reason to have a deck with no creatures with taunt.
Right. Do you have anything else to say about taunt? Because I'd love to talk about Death Rattle.
Why don't you talk about Death Rattle?
Death Rattle is the most fun. I mean, that is all there is to it. Death Rattle comes out, you've got a little spell on your card. It doesn't do something immediately like charge. It doesn't taunt. It doesn't give a secret or wind fury, which we'll go into later. It doesn't put a shield. Death Rattle basically sits there until the minion dies. And once the minion dies, something happens. Now, it can do different things. It can pop your creatures, it can hit you directly with damage, or it can bring out other creatures as well. There's the lion, I forget the name of the card specifically, but maybe when he gets hit, he brings out two hyenas. So you're killing the lion, but all of a sudden, boom, you've got two more cards you have to deal with after you've killed the lion.
Yeah, that's the Savannah High Main, by the way.
Right.
A staple in a hunter deck.
You can tell I don't play the hunter deck, but I do love my Death Rattle.
Yeah, one of my favorite Death Rattles is Sylvanas Windrunner. I don't have her yet, but I really want her. She's a 5/5 for 5, and her Death Rattle is to take control of a random enemy minion.
Yeah, Death Rattle is fun because your opponent, unlike a secret, which we'll get into later, your opponent can see what is going to happen when you kill that creature. It tells you right on the card. So it's not going to be a surprise. So you can try avoiding killing that creature, or you can say, well, let's get it over with and do it now.
Battle Cry. Battle Cry is one of the more common abilities in the game. And I think in my opinion, is probably the type of card that helps you design the way your deck works the best. Because if you're trying to control your opponent by removing their creatures, then there are cards that will destroy minions, you know, on the battle cry. Battle cry means this happens as soon as it comes out. The Big Game Hunter, it's an epic. Battle cry, destroy a minion with an attack of 7 or more. There's a similar card that will destroy minions with like 2 or less attack. There are those that will give adjacent minions taunt. There are those that let you draw cards. There are those that let you restore health. Pretty much any game mechanic that you want to really monopolize on, you can get with these cards that have death battle cry.
And sometimes they use, as you know, more than one, which can be very tricky too. They can come out with, I'm not sure if you've mentioned the charge and divine shield at the same time.
No, I didn't mention that one, but there's another one, Defender of Argus, a 3/3 creature for 4, gives adjacent minions +1/+1 and taunt. So if you've got 2 soldiers out there and you drop this defender in the middle of them, then suddenly they each have +1/+1 and taunt. That's a very powerful battle cry.
Absolutely. The next card is the next type of card is the ones that call out the secrets. Secrets work very... They were originally going to be called something else. Attack? What was it?
Combat tricks.
Combat tricks, but they decided to change it to secrets. A little question mark appears over your warrior or your priest or whatever you're using, and it sits there until something happens to trigger the secret. For hunters, there's a secret that you hit the hunter with direct damage and suddenly all your opponent's minions take 2 damage. I have a secret as my mage that the minute somebody hits me, I suddenly have a shield on me of 8, which I absolutely love. And there are cards that work with the secrets with the kind of a symbiosis that you call out the card, and with every secret played, she gets a +1 to attack. So the secrets work on many levels, but most of all, they keep you at bay, because if you see your opponent has a secret up, you're going to be more careful. I will hit my opponent with a 1/3 Void Walker because I'm only doing 1 point of damage to him, because he might have that one card or secret up that does 1 damage right back to me. So I'll be more careful. Even when drawing a card, there are secrets that the minute you draw a card or you play a card, your opponent's secret makes a copy of that minion. So if you bring out Ragnaros, suddenly he's got Ragnaros. Not so much fun.
It's very important to note that only 3 classes get secrets. The hunter has 7 secrets. 6 are actual secret spells. And so it's really only 6. They have a bow. The bow is affected by a secret. Whenever a secret is revealed, they gain +1 durability on the bow. So if you're playing a deck that's heavy on secrets, you could keep that bow active all through the game. So 6 hunter secrets, and there are 6 mage secrets. There are 4 paladin secrets. And there are also a number of cards that affect secrets. Like, there's the Secret Keeper. It's a 1/2 for 1. Whenever a secret is played, gain +1/+1. So there are other spells that interact with the secrets. The Mage has the Chiron Tour Mage and the Ethereal Arcanist that have abilities that affect secrets. The Chiron Tour Mage will allow you to cast your next secret for 0 after you play it. And if you control a secret at the end of your turn with the Ethereal Arcanist, you get +2/+2. So it is a really good mechanic, but only 3 classes get to use it. And there was a pretty heated forum thread today about someone who thought that secrets were broken and should be removed from the game. And what do you think? You think they're too powerful? You think it's broken? You think it's unfair?
Absolutely not. They add another level of funness because, I mean, I think if you don't have the little different tweaks that they have in the game, it'd get boring after a while. Now, if you got secrets, you're keeping it going. Okay, what's going to happen if, instead of, okay, he's got this out, I know what's going to happen. He's got this out, I know what he's going to happen. Okay, it's a priest, I know he might have mind control and he might be able to grab my card, so I might not want to play this card right now because it could suddenly be his. With a secret, you just don't know what's coming. Now, I think that's a great, great thing to have against you. It's just, it makes it so much fun. And likewise, you can put your secrets out and you're sitting there going, okay, hit me, hit me, hit me. And you're waiting for it to happen. I think it's a lot of fun.
It adds a lot to the way you think about attacking. When you see a secret there, first of all, the smart player goes through in their head, okay, these are the six secrets. If it does this, I do that, or if I do this, will it do that, and should I take the risk? Do I do a direct damage attack, or do I hit with just one minion? Do I wait to cast my next minion until after I attack with the first one, because there are secrets that will blow up all of my minions? So there's another layer of strategy there in playing against them, as well as knowing when to play them.
Right, and I think I actually have to look up the bugs on the secrets too, because I may have found a bug that if I don't see it on the forums, I'm going to have to report. Occasionally, as I said, I've got that mage secret where if I get hit by an opponent, I will get a shield for 8. I have literally been hit by another character, another mage hit me with a fireball directly, and my secret didn't pop. And then they hit me with another fireball, and that time it did. So I'm not sure if it's just quirky or what happened, but I'm going to have to check into that, because normally the secrets are pretty sound.
Yeah, there are still bugs going on in the game. Yesterday I was playing a game, I had a card in play, or there was a spell, that for each wounded minion I had, I'd get to draw a card. And I drew 2 cards, and I don't understand how I drew 2. I only had 1 wounded minion.
Yeah, and they still have not fixed the floating card problem. There are times, it seems to happen when you have a card that's in your hand or that you've played that gets returned to your hand. There's a rogue ability that is basically sends your creature to your hand, and the card stays. You get to see the back of the card kind of floating in the middle of the board, which could be kind of bad because I had it literally where they played their next creature. So I was barely able to see what their next creature was because that card was still floating there. So they still have kinks to work out. We're not quite ready to go live yet.
So the next ability is called Wind Fury, named after that famous Pandaren talk show host, Oprah Wind Fury.
No, you went there.
I did. There are not that many Wind Fury cards in the game, and that's a pity, although there are spells that can give you Wind Fury. Probably the most commonly used is the Young Dragonhawk. It's a 1-1 for 1, and you get to attack with it twice. Of course, it has its normal sleeping mode, so if you're playing against a mage, it never gets to attack even once, let alone twice. But there are only a couple of cards that have it, but there's even a weapon that has it, so I should tell you what it does. It enables you to go twice, attack twice. So provided you survive long enough, you can attack twice. The Doomhammer, which is Thrall's famous weapon, Shaman only, it has the ability to use Wind Fury. It's got a durability of 8 and an attack of 2, but I can attack with it twice. So if I want to knock out a 2-2 minion with the first shot and then attack my hero with the second, then I can. And it's very shaman related. There are shaman cards, I think, that affect it as well. And there are several cards that are shaman only, and then there are neutral. There's no other hero class that gets Wind Fury cards just for themselves, except the shaman.
isn't there a totem that has Winfury on it or something? I'm not sure about that, but I know there's a card that you can get. There's a card that you can get, and again, it's a shaman card that you can actually put Winfury onto a creature. So you can have a really powerful creature and throw Winfury on it, and your opponent is just dusted.
Yeah, that's true. And there's we were talking about special abilities, and not to get ahead on the list of abilities, there was a legendary, Alakir the Windlord. He was from one of the first Cataclysm raids. He has Wind Fury, Charge, Divine Shield, and Taunt. He's a 3/5 for 8, so he's not very powerful in how much damage he could deal out, but he's got a lot that he could do. So if you could get him out and then buff him up with some health or power, that's a pretty powerful card.
Mm-hmm. That I wouldn't want to see that coming against me unless I was playing a priest.
Which you never do.
Yeah, I mean, if I have to, I do have the Oh My God deck, which I have created. And I've played it basically because my quests make me play a priest. So I've had my little ability to steal somebody else's card, and I don't, you know what, I'm going to go back to last week when we were talking about how that card is going to be changed to a 10 mana cost card. It's really not going to make that much of a difference. That card is just very powerful.
Well,
really
it
powerful.
It won't make much of a difference in that people will not be playing it as heavily, because by the time you have 10 mana, you don't need to steal somebody else's big creature. You could be calling out your own.
Yeah, priests don't tend to call out bigwigs, though. They kind of heal themselves and get you.
Well, I think almost every deck has one or two or more big creatures lying in wait. You know, usually a legendary or a core hound or something.
Right. After Windfury, we have a card that ability is spell damage, and the spell damage is usually +1. It comes on the card, and basically what it means is while that creature or totem is sitting out there, if you're casting spells, you're going to be doing +1 more damage each time you cast a spell.
They're not all +1. Nope. Alagos, the legendary dragon, gives spell damage +5.
Right. And he comes out with, is he 10 cost to bring out, or is he to the 12? There's somebody who's more than 10, and I can never figure out how to get my mana up that high.
Yeah, he's 9 mana crystals, and he's a 4/12. So
right.
He's hard to kill. He doesn't hit very much, but he sure helps that spell casting.
Yep. So spell damage is really very cut and dry. It doesn't have them. It's not, as far as I'm concerned, it's not a death rattle, battle cry. It's not something that's as much fun as the others. The next one is Divine Shield, and that is basically a glowing orb around you that allows you to take one hit before it'll actually damage your character. And again, with a card like Battle Cry, sometimes it comes out with Divine Shield and something else, and you can attack right away and not take any damage.
Well, you got stealth.
I did forget stealth.
You forgot stealth. It must have been hiding.
It must have. So why don't you tell me about stealth, since it's eluded me?
Well, stealth enables to let your minion do exactly what it sounds like. He comes out, and everybody can see what he does, but nobody can touch him. He can't be hit with any direct damage spells or any spells that directly target it. It can, however, be subject to area of effect spells. So, take the Blood Imp, for example. Stealth, your other minions have +1 health. He's a 1/1 for 1, and most warlocks will call him out, and they won't ever attack with him. They'll just keep him in stealth the whole game to give the other minions extra health. And I can't hit it with a mage's Fire Blast, but I can do a Whirlwind with my warrior, which does 1 damage to all minions and take him out that way.
There's also a priest spell. Depending on the power, the priest spells go both ways. One is 3 or less, and the other, I believe, is 4 or more or 5 or more. If you hit him with that card, it does obliterate him, whether he's stealthed or not. That same goes for Divine Shield. You can sometimes destroy a card that has Divine Shield on it just outright, depending on the card you use. But it's always a risk. If you're not sure of what your card does or how it'll work, you might wind up playing a card that doesn't do exactly what you want to do.
Now let's talk about Enrage. Enrage requires a pretty clever set of spells and symbiotics in the game. First of all, the only class that gets Enrage cards are warriors, unless it's a neutral card. So there are like six neutral cards that have Enrage that can be used. But the warrior gets one special one. He gets Grom Hellscream, which has charge and Enrage. Rage 6. So what that means is this 4/9 creature with 8 casting costs who can charge on the first turn gets 6 attack each time it's damaged. So if I call it out and then I, let's say, do a whirlwind before I attack, he takes that 1 damage off his 9, but gets an extra 6. So he's no longer a 4/9, he's a 10/9. And then boom, I could zip across and attack for 10 on the first turn. So the Enrage, wow. Enrage is pretty powerful in certain circumstances. There's a card that has Enrage and Wind Fury, which makes that pretty deadly. Enrage and Taunt, a good way to get your Enrage up because you're enticing other minions to attack it. Then there's the very curious one, the Angry Chicken. It's a 1/1 for 1, and it enrages for 5. But if you attack it to give it Enrage, it's dead, unless you have some way to boost its health up. I don't even want to think about the permutations it must take to make a deck based around making the Angry Chicken work.
Ew. And the last one we have is called the Combo, and that is pretty much, that is a rogue-only kind of thing because, well, rogues do their combo thing. There are only 8 cards that have combos to them. What combo does is basically it means if you've cast a card or spell or minion this turn, the combo works. If not, the combo part of the card is null and void. So if I have an SI7 agent out and I haven't cast anything before it, it's a 3 cast card, does 3 damage with a 3 health. That's all there is to it. But if I've cast something, as soon as he comes out, his combo ability is to deal 4 damage, 2 damage, excuse me. Another combo card is the Kidnapper. That is a rare, and it's a 6 mana casting cost, and he's a 5/3 creature. And again, if you have already cast something, his combo is to return a minion to its owner's hand, sort of like Sap, but without having to throw the Sap card down. Then there are different ones that might do different damage and have different types of combinations. Cold Blood is a single mana. It is not a creature. It's a spell. You give a minion +2, but you know what? If you've attacked already, +2 attack, if you've already thrown out a card, you're not giving it a +2, you're giving it a +4. So there are some really fun rogue combo cards out there, and it is rogue specific. And of course, we have Edwin Van Cleef, whose combo is to gain +2/+2 for each card played earlier this turn. So if you've laid out 3 cards, you've got a +6/+6 going on to him, and he's a 3 casting cost for a 2/2 creature. So he can theoretically come out as a 8/8 or up, depending on how many cards you play. He could be really dangerous.
And rogues tend to hang back, build up their cards, not do very much, maybe poke you with their dagger, and then boom, 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 play out 4 or 5 combo cards in a single turn to try to really beat you down fast. And I could see Edwin Van Cleef being played at the end of that. Good thing he doesn't have charge.
Yep. So basically, yes, with the combo, it's a bonus if you've already played a card that turn. If not, and if it's a minion, it just comes out for the normal minion type of damage and attack. Or, excuse me, damage and health. And that's a wrap of the different types of abilities that the cards themselves have, and a lot of them are a lot of fun. A couple of them are kind of meh. I think spell damage personally is kind of meh. I think death rattle is fun.
You think spell damage is meh and you play a mage.
I know. I just like things that activate other things. What can I say?
Yeah, it's a little less flashy. That's true, but it's still very potent. And let's not forget that most of the cards in the game, at least the ones worth playing, all have special abilities. They may be unique. They may not be these 10 abilities that we just talked about. Black Lace talked about the archer that can ping you for one. Sort of reminds me of the prodigal sorcerer from Magic the Gathering that we used to call Tim the Enchanter. Pop, pop, pop. Of course, he could do it every turn. There's very many excellent abilities of characters, but these are the 10 iconic ones, the ones that you'll see more and more. When there's an expansion and new cards come out, you'll probably continue to see these, although they might invent a new one for an expansion.
We did forget one. I'm not sure if this is Druid specific. I'll have to check on that, but it's called Choose One. It basically gives you a choice. Power of the Wild is a 2 casting cost card, and you get to choose whether you want to give one of your minions +1/+1, or if you want to summon a 3/2 panther. Another one is Wrath. You can choose to do 3 damage to a single minion, or 1 damage, and then draw a card. So there are other ones that sneak in. There are just so many different ideas that Blizzard has come up with. It's incredible.
I think you're right. It's just the druids that have the choose ones. As long as we're going to be talking about things that only one class gets, because all those other things that we mentioned, or almost all of them, I think the combo was not included. Most of them had some neutral cards that had the ability, and I don't think combo had any neutral cards, did it?
But no. Combo was strictly rogue, and I think choose one is strictly druid.
Druid, definitely, it's just druid. And the reason they do that is there are so many different ways a druid can take shape. And, druid's the only class in World of Warcraft that has 4 specs. Everyone else has only 3. And that's the versatility of the druid, which comes out in the card game by enabling you to choose one. If we're going to talk about hero-specific abilities, then let's not forget Overcharge.
That's true.
Overcharge. Overcharge enables you to cast spells using mana that you do not have. You borrow against the next turn's mana. So you're not getting anything for free. You're just borrowing. So it's a pretty interesting ability. I haven't mastered playing the Shaman yet, so I haven't mastered Overcharge. But it's an excellent, excellent ability.
Definitely tricky. Okay, so that is going to wrap up our show for this week. The hour just slid by. I hope everybody got something interesting out of it. We are going to be talking next week about some of the apps that are out there for Android and for the iPhone. They're a little bit different. Unfortunately, some of the better ones are on... I found a really good one on the Android, but we will talk about those next week. Next week, we're also going to talk about arena versus normal play, and obviously other things as well.
Yeah, we'd like to talk to you more about the news that Blizzard is putting out about the game, the rule changes, the things that occur on the forums. So as news comes out, we could report it to you.
Right.
We'd love to read your questions that you email to us, if you have any questions like that. Anything else you wanted to mention, Black Lace?
Only that we can be found on Twitter at A Worthy Opponent. We can be found at awohearthstone@gmail.com, as Autumn's Bane has mentioned. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on iTunes and listen to us all over again. And you can find us on Facebook at awohearthstone. So until next week, when we go out live with Turn 5, I am Black Lace.
Happy travels. This is Autumn's Bane.
Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Blizzard, for making this possible. And happy hearthing. tuning in to tonight's broadcast of A Worthy Opponent, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check holosuitemedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Worthy Opponent. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to awohearthstone@gmail.com. Welcome to our inn.